Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, July 8th, 2024. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Missing two-year-old from Pullman found at checkpoint in the Sonora Desert in Mexico will be returned to her mother in Pullman. Father will be charged with custodial interference. Coeur d'Alene passes hate crime ordinance and fireworks-related house fires in Moscow, Clarkston, and Pomeroy over the holiday period. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Police in Mexico found a missing two-year-old toddler from Pullman at a checkpoint in Santa Ana in the state of Sonora, about 62 miles south of the U.S. border. A news release from the Pullman Police Department reports two-year-old Soraya Aung Harmon was with her father, Aaron Aung of Moscow, and his fiance Nadia Cole of Seattle. Authorities in Mexico handed the three over to U.S. Customs and Border Protection. Soraya Aung Harmon is with Arizona Child Protective Services. Aaron Aung is in the Santa Cruz County Detention Center in Nogales, Arizona, and will be extradited to Whitman County on a charge of first-degree custodial interference. The news release says Mexican authorities deported 21-year-old Nadia Cole to the United States. Pullman police say the FBI helped in the operation, along with the National Institute of Migration, Sonora State Police, the Nogales, Arizona Police Department, and U.S. Customs and Border Protection. In early June, authorities previously reported they believed Aung and Nadia Cole had fled to Mexico with Soraya Aung Harmon. Aaron Aung was supposed to hand over the toddler to her mother in Pullman Monday, June 3rd. FBI agents, Latah County Sheriff's deputies, and Moscow and Pullman police searched Aung's home and vehicles at 1936 East F Street in Moscow in mid-June. Cole's family reported her missing Tuesday, May 28th at SeaTac Airport when she left her belongings with her family to go use a restroom as the family was about to board a flight to Germany. Cameras at the airport show Cole leaving the airport via a light rail train. Shortly after Sarai Aung Harmon's failure to return June 3rd, the Lewiston Tribune reported Aaron Aung and Soraya Aung Harmon were on a fishing trip to Montana. The mother of the toddler, Samara Harmon, told Spokane television station KREM at the time nobody informed her that her daughter and Aung were going to Montana. Facing a long-held reputation for hate crimes, the Coeur d'Alene City Council last week unanimously passed an anti-discrimination ordinance that adds a misdemeanor to charges for any criminal act that has discriminatory intent. The City Council also added a new provision against harassment and intimidation, which would include acts not covered by Idaho's malicious harassment law. Current state malicious harassment law makes it illegal for a person to make threats or to damage property because of race, disability, religion, or national origin, but not all cases of verbal abuse or harassment are covered under the law. The Coeur d'Alene ordinance protects people against harassment and intimidation because of race, disability, religion, or sexuality. According to the Spokesman Review, Councilmember Amy Evans said at Tuesday night's meeting, "We're here to protect the community and protect the people we love dearly. Hate will not be tolerated and should not be tolerated in Coeur d'Alene and surrounding areas." The new ordinance says someone has to believe bodily injury will occur as a result of, quote, actual or perceived race, color, creed, religion, ancestry, gender, sexual orientation, gender identity, physical or mental disability, or national origin. The seeds of Northern Idaho's national reputation for racism came when Richard Butler's Aryan Nations began holding neo-Nazi meetups at his Aryan Nations compound in Hayden Lake in the 1980s, which resulted in bombings in downtown Coeur d'Alene and Spokane by people tied to the Aryan Nations. Although the Southern Poverty Law Center sued the Aryan Nations out of existence in 2000, anti-gay and racist organizing has continued in the area and has become mainstreamed as right-wing extremists have been elected to the legislature from the area and other public boards with the support of the Kootenai County Republican Party Central Committee. Coeur d'Alene police arrested 31 members of the white nationalist group Patriot Front in June 2022 as they descended from around the nation on the Panhandle Pride event in Coeur d'Alene City Park with plans to cause a disruption with a smoke grenade, shields, armor, and flagpoles that could be used as weapons. Coeur d'Alene prosecutors botched the prosecution of Patriot Front leader Thomas Rousseau, although most of his group pled guilty to conspiracy to riot or similar charges. Coeur d'Alene city prosecutors also declined to charge a teen who yelled racial slurs from his car at the University of Utah women's basketball team coaches and cheerleaders as they walked to and from dinner at a downtown Coeur d'Alene restaurant while staying in the area for the NCAA basketball tournament in March, an incident that gained national press coverage. Councilmember Dan Gookin said at the city council meeting Tuesday, the new ordinance would still not have likely classified the racial harassment as a hate crime if it had been in effect at the time of the harassment of the basketball team. Gookin said, prosecutors can't judge the content of the speech. He said, as long as you're not inciting violence. Had he stopped the car and got out, that would be different. City Attorney Randy Adams said during the meeting, the new law does not criminalize speech or hateful beliefs, but it's an effort to, quote, punish the conduct of selecting a victim based on race or other characteristics. Adams said similar state laws called intent crimes exist in Idaho. He said those intent crimes are perfectly legal, perfectly valid, and do not violate the Constitution. We are not launching the city into the unknown. After the Patriot Front arrests, Chief of Staff and Press Secretary for former Idaho Governor Cecil Andrus, Mark Johnson, criticized the lack of effective response from Idaho's political leaders. Writing in a June 2022 column published in the Lewiston Tribune, Johnson wrote, Idaho Governor Brad Little issued a mealy-mouthed statement extolling everyone's right to peaceful protest and praised the police response. Little did not deplore the white nationalist agenda of Patriot Front. The governor did not link the radicals to a growing national movement to disparage members of the LGBTQ community, and Little did not summon the courage to be outraged by members of his own party cheering on white supremacists and hate spreaders. As Rebecca Boone of the Associated Press reported, a lawmaker from the northernmost region of the state, Republican Representative Heather Scott, told an audience that drag queens and other LGBTQ supporters are waging a war of perversion against our children. That is an outrageous, untrue, and dangerous accusation that deserves only censure. The non-response by Idaho conservatives is a big tell. Little and most Republicans are afraid of the radical right because they realize they constitute the growing racist and hateful wing of the GOP. They will come to rue their inaction because inaction will foster more hate. Doug Jones, a former Alabama senator and one-time prosecutor who finally brought to justice the racist Ku Klux Klan murderers of four little black girls in a Birmingham church in 1963, issued a stern warning during an interview with the Idaho Capital Sun. There's a reason they felt like they could do this. There's a reason that a guy from Alabama went all the way out there, Jones said. There are gay pride events going on all over the country. Why did they pick Idaho? It's because of a conservative government that they felt like they could do it and they would be part of the community as opposed to being an outlier. And I believe all people in Alabama and Idaho are much better than that, and they believe in decency, civility, and giving everybody equal opportunities. Maybe we should hope so, but it's equally possible the opposite is true. Once it was said that Idaho is too great for hate, but hate now seems to be the state's brand, and Republican elected officials are empowering the hate. That was a portion of a column by Chief of Staff and Press Secretary for former Idaho Governor Cecil Andrus, Mark Johnson, published in June 2022 in the Lewiston Tribune. The manager of the Hanford Nuclear Reservation reported last week the Department of Energy has completed emptying radioactive waste from four underground tanks at the AX tank farm along the banks of the Columbia River. The Department of Energy is endeavoring to empty 149 single-wall underground radioactive waste tanks that were in danger of leaking into the ground near the river. With the announcement of the completion of the process at the AX tank farm, the Department of Energy has finished work on 21 out of the 149 single-wall tanks. Some of the tanks date back to the development of the atomic bomb during World War II. Hanford Department of Energy manager Brian Vance told the Tri-City Herald the DOE has already emptied 16 tanks at the C tank farm and one tank at the S tank farm to regulatory standards. It's been 20 years since the first of the single-walled underground tanks was emptied. Washington Department of Ecology Hanford Cleanup Section Manager Beth Rochette told the Seattle Times, "We're excited to see momentum continuing building in cleaning up Hanford's waste." Hanford manager Vance said mobilizing and transferring tank waste from older to newer tanks safely and efficiently continues to reduce risks to our workforce and our community. Moscow firefighters say fireworks may have caused a fire at a home at 411 North Almond Street Wednesday night. Crews responded to the house fire that heavily damaged a downstairs bedroom, making the home uninhabitable for now. Firefighters saw smoke and flames coming from the front of the house and underneath it when they arrived, while an adult and two children were trying to put out the fire. After an initial investigation, a fire inspector found discarded, discharged fireworks in a trash can near the residence. The Lewiston Tribune reported a fire Thursday linked to fireworks damaged a home in Pomeroy. Garfield County Fire District Chief James Cleveland said the fire was in a wooden shingle roof home, and bystanders opened the door to the house and alerted a older man who was in a bedroom about 30 feet from where the fire started and helped him walk out. Another fireworks-related fire damaged the attic of a home in Assotin. Fire destroyed an uninhabited home at 1327 Poplar Street in Clarkston Thursday. The home, which was reduced to rubble, was filled with belongings of the property owner who lives elsewhere in the area. Firefighters found the home fully engulfed and worked to prevent the fire from spreading to nearby properties. Clarkston fire crews also responded to six grass fires Thursday evening. You're tuned in to the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow Pullman.
The Biden administration is proposing rules to protect workers from extreme heat. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration says its proposed regulations would protect 36 million workers in outdoor and indoor situations. Samantha Guerrero with the Idaho Organization of Resource Councils says these protections are needed for the state's farm workers.
This would require worker access to clean drinking water and for access to shaded or indoor rest areas, and this would also allow the right to take regular rest breaks, which in Idaho law we currently don't have anything like that.
The Bureau of Labor Statistics says 479 workers died from heat exposure between 2011 and 2022, and there were more than 33,000 heat-related illnesses and injuries reported in that time. A poll from the Rural Democracy Initiative found these kinds of protections are popular, with 77% of rural voters supporting workers' right to organize for safe working conditions. Guerrero says it's important for the federal government to step up in the area to fill in gaps in Idaho laws.
There are a lot of farm workers who are in danger of losing their lives in these extreme temperatures, and so far we have seen no urgency from the state to enact or create any protections.
Guerrero says protection from the heat for outdoor workers is overdue, and the proposed rules are simply the minimum of what can be done. She says farm workers are among the most affected by extreme heat, and yet they have the fewest safeguards.
They are continuously left out of having protections and out of conversations of what are their needs and how can we better serve them and make sure that we are protecting their lives, because farm work is some of the most dangerous work on the planet.
For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by the Moscow Food Co-op, specializing in food, goods, and programs that nourish and nurture our community. The Moscow Food Co-op is located at 121 East 5th Street. For more information, visit moscowfood.coop, call 882-8537, or find them on Facebook. KRFP is also sponsored by
Tie-Dye Everything, with locally made tie-dyed items, incense, and other accessories. Tie-Dye Everything is located near 6th Street at 527 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, you can find Tie-Dye Everything at tiedye-everything.com.
Pullman Fire Marshal Darren Jones says about a dozen insurance investigators attempted to determine the cause of the fire at Express Storage on the Moscow-Pullman Highway, but nobody has been able to determine the cause of the February 8th fire that consumed 10 large storage units containing valuable items such as motorhomes, vehicles, all-terrain vehicles, boats, and household items. Jones said estimates are that the damage was $2 million. Jones told the Daily News the number of investigators working on the case and the size of the destroyed units increased the length of time it took to do the investigation. He said the fire was likely an accident. Jones said the fact investigators were not able to find a cause for the fire won't affect insurance claims, and that insurance companies want to know the cause of fires because it helps them gather statistics so they can decide what to charge for insurance. He said the only thing that would nullify a claim is if insurance fraud has been committed. In this case, it shouldn't make a difference. It won't affect anyone getting paid for their losses. No one was injured in the February 8th blaze, but it took firefighters days to find and put out hotspots in the metal-walled storage facility. Fighting the fire was more complicated because firefighters had to saw through doors and walls to get into the burning building because each unit had owner's or renter's individual locks. U.S. District Judge Thomas Rice in Spokane Wednesday ruled against claims by four homeless people and the group Elves for the Homeless, who sued the city of Clarkston for violations of a federal and state constitutional right to travel, which would include the right not to travel, a state constitutional right against cruel punishment, and state and federal prohibitions against the deprivation of due process and the seizure of property without due process, as well as violations of the Federal Americans with Disabilities Act. The plaintiffs were seeking a temporary restraining order against the city's enforcement of their camping ordinance, which only allows camping in a single park, Foster Park, and only between the hours of 9 p.m. and 7 a.m. During other times, tents and possessions must be removed. According to the Lewiston Tribune, Judge Rice wrote the plaintiffs did not satisfy legal tests that would have allowed him to grant relief. Judge Rice apparently did not mention last week's U.S. Supreme Court decision that threw out a Ninth District Court of Appeals standard that had been in effect for many years in the city of Boise versus Martin, which said local governments cannot enforce local anti-camping, anti-lying, and sleeping ordinances if there is not enough shelter space in the city. The case that went to the Supreme Court was from the city of Grants Pass, Oregon, which had started enforcing its anti-camping ordinance, even though there was only one homeless shelter in the city without enough space to deal with the local homeless population. Opponents of the Grants Pass ordinance said it violated constitutional provisions against cruel punishment, but the Supreme Court, voting 6-3, said it did not. Clarkston city officials plan to discuss Judge Rice's ruling and the U.S. Supreme Court decision at the next city council meeting Monday at 7 p.m. City Administrator Steve Austin told the paper, "We will proceed with great care, considering the rights and needs of all residents, the Supreme Court ruling and other relevant litigation, including the decision in Potter v. Lacey and the order denying the temporary restraining order in Park v. the City of Clarkston." The City of Moscow has released a statement on its website about construction on East A Street between Washington and Adams Streets this summer. Crews are doing the work on the steepest part of the street near the recently closed Russell School. The work on East A Street is to replace existing storm, sanitary, and water utility lines and fully surface the block from Washington to Adams with asphalt, sidewalk, and gutters. The statement says, during the project, most of the work will be within A Street, but residents can expect road closures, detours, and possible delays near this location. Local access for residents and businesses will remain open as much as possible during construction. However, the city is asking residents to utilize parking on side streets as much as possible, as access to A Street will be intermittent. The city appreciates the public patience as these necessary repairs and upgrades are made to the infrastructure. The project is scheduled for completion in October. The statement asks if the project on East A Street or any other city project impacts anyone with disabilities. People should call the city at 208-883-7600. And the statement also gives an email address. The city number for accessibility concerns, again, is 208-883-7600. The statement also says every effort will be made to adhere to the contractor's daily schedule. However, unforeseen circumstances may require adjustment. For questions about the project, including the project schedule, or concerns about resident access, please contact the City of Moscow Engineering Division at 208-883-7034. That number again is 208-883-7034 for the City of Moscow Engineering Division.
Members of the Service Employees International Union start this week in the Portland area with new contracts for their work. SEIU Local 49 members work as security officers and janitorial staff for some of the biggest employers in the Pacific Northwest. The Portland team bargained for about a month and gained wage increases, additional paid leave, and health and safety improvements. Renato Quintero, a janitor at Intel, says they had to work hard to make these changes, but he thinks the effort was worthwhile.
Those things are really good for our work and for our family to, you know, they've been able to have more money and also time to enjoy our family life.
The new contracts will affect nearly 2,000 workers in the Portland metro area. The union expects the wage increases to add $9 million to the local economy. In addition to pay, union leaders say the new contracts come with a sense of recognition. They note people in these professions worked through the pandemic, and their jobs were considered essential. Michael Lindsay, a security officer with GardaWorld Security Services, sees these contracts as a step into the future.
This is a new era for unions, especially coming out of the pandemic, and I'm excited to see what the next few years hold for us.
Lindsay predicts the new contracts will allow employees to focus on their jobs more. He also expects a decrease in staff turnover, which will result in an increase in staff experience. For Oregon News Service, I'm Mason Kennedy.
As Oregon is seeing its first major heat event of the summer, some simple tips can help you keep your home cooler. Most of Oregon was under a heat advisory over the holiday weekend. And with summer just starting, Cameron Starr with Energy Trust of Oregon says more hot days are likely ahead. He says one recommendation is to keep out heat by pulling down window shades during the hottest part of day and open windows when temperatures cool down.
During that time when it's cool outside, a box fan or window-mounted fan on the shady side of the house can really be effective and drawing in cool air.
Excessive heat can be dangerous. Starr says cooling centers are open across the state for people struggling with the heat. He also notes that you can visit many local businesses with air conditioning to cool down. Starr advises people to use heat-generating devices, such as ovens, less frequently during hot days. He adds it's important to check the filters in your air conditioners, especially if they're window-mounted or portable units.
You want to make sure that you're checking those filters. And a lot of manufacturers state to check and clean those every 2 weeks. And if you've got pets, you probably want to increase that cycle.
For people with fans, Starr says check to ensure it's spinning in the direction that cools, allowing you to feel a breeze rather than pulling cool air upward. And making sure there aren't any gaps in doors and windows is also important.
Sealing off any gaps can very much help reduce the amount of cool air that you're losing to the outside.
Energy Trust offers cash incentives for people to install systems that cool or provide heat during the winter. There are also federal tax credits available for equipment like energy-efficient heat pumps. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Bureau of Land Management says it will start a wild horse roundup in Wyoming's White Mountain area, but wildlife advocates say the plan exceeds the agency's authority. The BLM aims to gather nearly 600 wild horses starting August 15th in an area northwest of Rock Springs to prevent what it calls further deterioration of the land health due to impacts from the animals. The group Wild American Horse Conservation says the agency used incorrect data to reach that number, improperly including full counts. Suzanne Roy with the group says bad numbers are a problem for the local ecotourism business the horses support through a wild horse scenic loop drive.
We're very concerned that the BLM is playing with numbers to remove more horses than they're legally allowed to. And if they are allowed to proceed, it will reduce the herd to such a low number, you'll never be able to view the horses.
Roundups involve gathering horses into holding pens until they're adopted. But Roy says there are more horses being held than the adoption market can absorb, and that difference costs taxpayers about $70 million a year. Roundups are an alternate population control method to sterilization, but Roy says her group advocates instead for fertility control.
Basically, it's called immunocontraception, and it's a vaccine that creates an immune response in the animals, and it prevents fertilization.
Roy says this method is also reversible, which is important in case of unexpected population die-offs. The BLM is a multiple-use agency charged with balancing numerous interests, including those of the public, grazing rights, and multiple wildlife species. Mickey Fisher with the BLM Wyoming Field Office says the agency isn't opposed to fertility treatments, but they're more difficult to implement.
Unfortunately, with herd management areas of this size and even larger ones, the sheer number of horses that we're required to gather to get down to the appropriate management level, fertility treatments and darting practices, they're insufficient.
A larger roundup is currently underway across 4 herd management areas in central Wyoming. Fisher says the BLM started the roundup on July 1st to gather over 2,700 animals. I'm Kathleen Shannon reporting for Wyoming News Service.
Doctors in the state health department are using a novel approach to address a critical blood shortage in rural Montana. A drive-through service called the Montana Interfacility Blood Network is creating more life-saving options for critical care patients in outlying areas. It started by chance in 2019 when a patient was taken by ambulance from tiny Lame Deer 2.5 hours to Billings and had to stop for blood at rural hospitals along the way. According to reporting from KFF Health News, Montana State Trauma System Manager Alyssa Johnson says health leaders thought, why not formalize this and make it the norm?
That was really what started this idea of, well, what if you could just pick up blood and keep going and keep moving forward? If there's a patient at point A and they're going to point C, they're going to stop by a hospital, which is point B.
Johnson says as soon as an ambulance passes through a small town and gets an emergency supply of blood, that rural hospital works with the state to start replacing it. But this can be a challenge, as Montana faces a long-term blood shortage that only got worse during the pandemic. Patients routinely travel 250 miles by ambulance to reach a Level 1 trauma center in Montana, often in Billings. The drive-through blood network is uniquely rural and certainly low-tech, but trauma surgeon Dr. Gordon Rhea at the Billings Clinic has seen the system at work when a hemorrhaging patient came 80 miles by ambulance to the Billings Trauma Center.
They stopped by another hospital that was at the midway point. Blood was handed off by Montana State Troopers at the off-ramp of the highway into an ambulance. They continued transfusion for that patient. The patient was able to get to us and survived.
Montana won an International Innovation Award for the Blood Network. Even so, state health experts are still looking for ways to improve its effectiveness and address the chronic statewide blood shortage. This story was originally reported by Ariel Zients with KFF Health News. This is Mark Moran for Big Sky Connection.
Delegates at the Democratic State Convention in Moscow last month approved a resolution in favor of medical cannabis for veterans. Here's Platform Committee Vice Chair Terry Pickens reading the resolution aloud to the delegates.
Whereas the Idaho Democratic Party deeply values and honors the service and sacrifices of our veterans who have bravely defended our nation and its principles. Whereas President Joe Biden's administration has made significant strides in addressing veterans' issues, including improvements in health care, mental health support, housing, and employment opportunities. And whereas the Biden administration has increased funding for the Department of Veterans Affairs, implemented measures to reduce veteran homelessness, expanded access to mental health services, and improved benefits processing to ensure that veterans receive the care and support they deserve. And whereas medical marijuana has been shown to provide relief for various conditions commonly affecting veterans, including chronic pain, cancer, post-traumatic stress disorder, and other mental health issues, offering a potential alternative to opioid-based treatments. Whereas federal laws restrict the ability of veterans to access medical marijuana, despite its potential benefits and the growing body of research supporting its use for medical purposes. And whereas U.S. military veterans have been heavily impacted by the opioid overdose crisis, with drug overdose mortality rates increasing by 53% from 2010 to 2019, and addressing drug overdose in the veteran population requires accessible and non-judgmental, low-threshold, wraparound, and holistic solutions that recognize the complex etiology of overdose risk for veterans. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Idaho Democratic Party honors and expresses profound gratitude to all veterans for their service and dedication to our country. And be it further resolved that the Idaho Democratic Party commends President Joe Biden and his administration for their accomplishments in improving the lives of veterans, including increased funding for the VA, enhanced mental health services, reduced veteran homelessness, and expedited benefits processing. And be it further resolved that the Idaho Democratic Party calls on the Idaho Legislature and Congress to pass legislation that permits the use of medical marijuana for veterans, ensuring they have access to all available treatment options to improve their quality of life. And so be it resolved that the Idaho Democratic Party will actively advocate for these measures and work with local, state, and national leaders to ensure that veterans receive the comprehensive care and support they deserve, including access to medical marijuana as a viable treatment option.
There was one comment during debate that mentioned the focus on veterans.
Jenny Ballou, Lincoln County, just a quick question. Since I can't open the email that shows me all the resolutions as they've come, is one of the ones still to come going to address medical marijuana for everyone else, or is it only being asked to be approved for veterans' use?
It only applies here.
And there's no other resolution that will come up?
That's correct.
There was no further discussion on that issue, and the delegates voted overwhelmingly June 23rd to approve the resolution endorsing legalized medical cannabis for veterans. And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. The National Weather Service has an excessive heat warning in effect until 10 p.m. Wednesday for eastern and central Washington and northern and north central Idaho. Dangerously hot conditions during the day with little relief overnight. Highs 95 to 105 across the region today, 100 to 108 tomorrow and Wednesday. Overnight lows in the 60s to mid-70s. Heat-related illnesses increase significantly during extreme heat. Drink plenty of fluid, stay in an air-conditioned room, stay out of the sun, and check up on relatives and neighbors. Take extra precautions when outside. Wear lightweight and loose-fitting clothing. Try to limit strenuous activities to early morning or evening hours. Take action when you see symptoms of heat exhaustion or heat stroke. Stay cool, stay hydrated. Forecast for the Moscow Pullman area is calling for mostly clear conditions, at least through Saturday, with a low of 63 tonight. Highs 99 tomorrow, 100 on Wednesday, 91 on Thursday, and 95 Friday and Saturday. Lows 66 Tuesday night, 62 Wednesday night, and 60 Thursday and Friday night. Current temperature is 91 degrees. Taking a quick look at Lewiston, the current temperature down there is 102 degrees, and they are predicting a high of 111 tomorrow and a high of 112 on Wednesday in Lewiston, Idaho. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. You can also go to the KRFP.org website to find out more ways to help KRFP. I'm Lee Robartis. Thanks for listening. We've got Flashpoints coming up next, and Bex is playing music for you with Spotlight starting at 7:30. Stay tuned for more KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored in part by Hunga Dunga Brewing Company of 333 North Jackson Street in Moscow. Hunga Dunga features live music, special events, fine food, and craft beers at hungadungabrewing.com and on Facebook and Instagram.
KRFP supports progressive values, including multiculturalism and environmentalism.